You're listening to the Doggeritaville podcast. I'm Laura.
And I'm Lily. We are two dog professionals with two different styles, two different backgrounds, and two common goals.
To drink delicious margaritas and talk about dogs.
Welcome to Doggeritaville. Welcome to episode 12 of the Doggeritaville podcast. Today we are talking about dog-to-dog skills and drinking spicy margaritas.
I'm not paying attention. For every episode, each of us does our best to create a delicious margarita around our theme. We post the recipes on Instagram so you can try them at home. And you can let us know if you have an idea for a theme. Today's theme was actually suggested by our one and only Patreon.
Yay!
Our recipes always differ, so you have some variety to choose from generally, although you don't today. we made the same thing and they both suck, so I'll just put that out there now.
We did make them differently from each
did
other.
We?
Yeah.
Well, fine. They both suck still, so.
They do. They both suck. So we are going to start today by talking about how dog-to-dog social skills work. The best time to start socializing and the varying degrees of dog socialization. So we have touched on this in other episodes, so I won't spend a ton of time on it, but the best time to socialize a dog is before 14 weeks of age. This is not the only time that it's possible to socialize a dog, but it is the most impactful time to do that work. That's when impressions will be the most meaningful to the dog, so positive experiences with other dogs during this window will go a long, long way, whereas if you're socializing your dog with other dogs when it's a little bit older, you might have to do a lot more work depending on how confident and social your dog is naturally.
Yeah, I think I always got, like, kind of offended by socialization periods because I was like, never had any of my dogs from puppies and I socialized all of them and blah, 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 blah. But that's not what it means, right? Like, it just means that that's the most optimal time to do it. You can do it at any time, but that's, like, the best case scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah. So despite what most people think, it's not just a matter of, like, black and white, your dog is friendly or it's not friendly. There are varying degrees of dog skills, and dogs will naturally get less social as they get older. So it's important to kind of keep them well socialized. Almost every single time I adopt out a puppy, I interview these people before they ever meet the puppy, and I'm like, oh, your existing dog is social. Oh, yeah, they're social. And then I show up with a puppy in my hands and their dog is losing their ever-loving mind. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to introduce this tiny puppy to your giant dog that's flipping its shit. And they're like, oh, well, you know, he was socialized when he was a puppy. And I was like, when's the last time he met a dog? Like 3 years ago. And it's like, yeah, so your dog's not social anymore. Like, yeah, it's probably not going to murder someone, but, like, that goes away.
Yeah, it needs to be a practice, definitely.
Yeah, exactly. You can't just, like, but for some reason that's, like, a normal thing, and I run into it all the time, that you socialize your puppy and then just don't worry about it anymore, and you're just like, oh, they're friendly, and it's like, no, they haven't met a dog in years. That's not how this works. And again, like Lily said, you know, there's plenty of dogs that could not see another dog for 10 years and still be fine. That's always going to happen. There could be a dog that meets dogs every day its whole life and then at 10 years old is like, nope, I'm done. I mean, obviously all dogs are individuals, but there are varying kind of degrees of being social. So to kind of go over those really quickly is just being dog social basically means that they like all dogs with few exceptions. They seek out other dogs. They enjoy playing with other dogs. They rarely, if ever, have an issue with other dogs. Dog tolerant would be the next level. And that's, it likes most other dogs. It's either going to be playful with most other dogs or neutral with most other dogs. But it generally, they'll generally tolerate quite a bit. They have pretty good communication, but they definitely don't like every dog, right? So like Peter is a good example of dog tolerant. He's very friendly. He's not going to go after anybody, but he likes certain dogs. He doesn't like every dog. And then dog selective. I don't have a good example for dog selective, but Basically, they have certain dogs that they get along with, but they certainly don't get along with all dogs. A lot of the times, dogs that are selective, kind of the average dog owner is going to call them the fun police because they're constantly correcting other dogs, whether it's appropriate or not. And they usually get away with it, unfortunately. But they tend to like dogs with a certain play style or a certain type of dog, but they generally don't like every dog. And then dog aggressive, which is the definition. So I looked this up, obviously, just to get like a more.
I was going to ask, what are these four tiers from? Like, where did you get these?
So I've always heard of these four tiers from everybody since I started, of like varying degrees of socialization. But I wanted to get like a more like formal definition. And so this is just kind of like a mishmash of the different formal definitions of these things. Because if I was saying my opinion, I would say dog social, likes all dogs, dog tolerant, tolerates dogs, but only plays with some, selective, doesn't really like most dogs. And then dog aggressive is zero dogs. But the definitions I was finding for dog aggressive said little to no friends. Short fuse, poor social skills. And I was like, to me, dog aggressive is cannot be with dogs at all.
Well, maybe there are some situations where it grew up in a multi-dog household, so gets along with its siblings, but then outside the home, yeah, but issue or something.
Yeah. But to me, that would, I don't know, I guess that would be more selective. I don't know. I mean, we could go on about that all day, but... So one thing that I did want to just mention for sure, though, is that, like, being truly dog social and truly dog aggressive are both fairly rare. So dog tolerant and dog selective are the most, like, common, I think. Because dog tolerant is likes most other dogs. But how many dogs do you know that legitimately enjoy every single dog?
Right.
It's pretty rare, right? Like, so to me, that's dog social. So I feel like most dogs are dog tolerant, and then most dogs are not aggressive, but they're selective. So they like some dogs, they don't like all dogs. But most importantly, I just completely lost my train of thought. Oh, so yeah, dog selective dogs might be reactive as well. And so I feel like a lot of reactive dogs or dogs that have gotten in squabbles because they can't meet every single dog automatically get labeled dog aggressive, and they're not. Charlie's a little bit closer to like actual dog aggression, where every dog, every time, no matter what, he's going to go after them. Unprovoked, no reasoning whatsoever, he's going to attack them. End of story. And that's pretty rare. Like most dogs, they might be easily triggered, but they're not just going to attack from behind with no reasoning. Like, Charlie literally hunts dogs like a lion on a zebra. Like, he will attack them from behind. And that's pretty unusual. So I just think dog selective and dog tolerant, people need to understand that that's probably the most common. And dog social and dog aggressive are both somewhat, if not pretty rare.
Yeah, I think people tend to think of dogs as being friendly and happy all the time. And it's like, if a dog is not friendly or happy, even every once in a while, it's like a defective dog. And that's not true. And it's also not fair, because like, who's happy all the time? You know, like, who likes every single person they meet? Being dog selective is not a bad thing. And being completely dog social is not even the norm, I would say. Like Laura was saying, it's our expectation, but it's not the norm. So we need to start viewing our dogs as living creatures with preferences, just like anything else. And then I have a bullet point here that I'm laughing at now, because it says, I just wanted to point out that sometimes certain dogs are just unlikable. In parentheses, explain about Mooney.
It's true. It's so
true. Mooney, like, he has friends, and all the puppies that come through here love Mooney. Like, he, you know, there are dogs who like Mooney, but in general, he is just an unlikable dog. Dogs really hate him for the most part, especially adult dogs. And sometimes I don't even know why. Like, we had a dog boarding here. He didn't hate Mooney, but he wasn't crazy about him. But like, he reacted to Mooney so differently from Balto. And I, like, I'm trained, you know, on dog body language and everything. And I'm looking at Mooney and I'm like, I literally don't even know what he's doing. He's just laying there. Like, but there's something about him that's happening where the other dog is like, I don't like that.
It's literally just their vibe.
Yeah.
Like, I've had dogs like that. A lot of dogs really, not so much anymore because now he's really old. But a lot of dogs used to be like that with Churchill. And I don't know if it's just because he was so, like, confident and like, hey, what's going on? Like, I don't know if that was it or what, but dogs would go after Churchill all the time. And he was like, what? I didn't do anything. And it was the same thing where it's like, no, I'm staring at you. I know you didn't do anything. They just don't fucking like you.
Yeah. It's so odd. And so sometimes you can be looking at the situation and wondering what it is your dog doesn't like about another dog. But there are some times where you're just not going to be able to tell. And that's okay. Just believe your dog that they don't like it and leave it alone.
Yeah, that's super important because, like, especially with Peter being a test dog back in the day, like, he would refuse to go over to another dog. And I'd be like, Peter, we're working. Go do what you need to do. And he'd be like, no, I'm not going over there. And to me, like, that dog's not doing anything. But then 2 seconds later or a couple minutes later, the dog would snap or something. And I'd be like, oh, you knew that was coming. And I didn't see it at all. So definitely, like, they communicate to each other on levels that we could never even dream of. Believe your dog. If they're telling you that they don't want to be around a dog or whatever it is, believe them.
All right, so that is some basics of dog-to-dog skills. We'll take a short break here and dive into how to properly introduce your dog to a new dog when we get back. Margarita check. Mara, how did you make your spicy margarita?
It was a shit show. I'm always late, but today I was an hour late, which is exceptional even for me. So I literally was just throwing shit in a cup, and believe it or not, it didn't end well. So I did, what did I do? So I did 2 ounces of tequila, 2 ounces of pineapple juice. I traded the triple sec for pineapple liqueur. So I did 1 ounce pineapple liqueur. I did 2 juice limes, which was too many. And then I did 3 sliced jalapenos and soaked that in tequila. But I didn't have enough time to soak it because I was so late. So I only soaked it for like 5 minutes or so, and that was not enough time. So this doesn't taste anything like jalapenos. So it's terrible, basically, is what I'm saying. You did the same thing, but you did it differently, or?
So I also did pineapple jalapeno, but I made it differently because I had pineapple jalapeno tequila already here, and we never drink it, and so I figured I might as well just
Why
do
not?
That.
Yeah.
So I made basically a regular margarita. I juiced 2 limes and then I did 3 ounces of that pineapple jalapeno tequila and then 3/4 of an ounce of pineapple citronage instead of triple sec, which I usually do. Shook it over ice, strained it over ice, and salted the rim. And I hated it. It was so gross. So I'm drinking a gin and tonic.
So I gave up.
I don't like that tequila. I don't like the taste of peppers in my margarita. Like, no thanks. I'm also not a spicy person. Like, I'm just
I'm
really
not either. Like, I was legitimately pissed at Gentry for recommending this. that's why I did pineapple jalapeno, because I figured it was the only, like, spicy margarita I would even be able to handle. I was, like, literally when she recommended it, I was legit pissed off. I was like, you fucking asshole. I don't do anything spicy. I don't like spicy. I don't do anything. Like, you put too much pepper on something and it's too hot for me. Like,
yeah,
I don't do it. But then I tried it and I really liked it. And then today was not the day.
Today is not the day.
Yeah.
Well, let's dive into how to properly introduce your dog to a new dog. So Laura, why don't you start?
Unleash nose-to-nose dog intros are not appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that one more time, just in case people don't understand. Unleash nose-to-nose intros are a hard pass. It's gonna be a no from me. I'll try to make this as short as possible, but I'm in school for shelter management. And we just had a whole segment on dog behavior. And part of that is temperament testing shelter dogs. And I had to sit through a whole... I said I was going to stop swearing. I had to sit through an entire week of these motherfuckers. Being like, this is how you dog test, nose to nose on leash, because that's real life. And if they can't do it, they're a community safety risk. And I'm surprised my computer is still alive, because so many times I wanted to throw it against the fucking wall.
I cannot understand that way of thinking. I don't get it. Like, just instead of learning ourselves and doing it better, we have to just force our dogs to go through our way of doing things because we're dumb. Really? I don't.
Rather than educate the public on how dogs work, let's just expect the dogs to tolerate our dumbasses.
I
mean, that makes sense, right?
I hate that.
Anyways, nose-to-nose intros aren't it. Don't do it. The best way to introduce two dogs is to do parallel walks and then close the distance as they chill out or calm down. Slow and steady introductions make for the best friendships. A lot of the times, even with two social dogs, if you introduce them too quick and let them just start playing and go roughhouse right away, there's going to be a squabble eventually because they don't have any sort of basis of communication. So yeah, they're both friendly. Yeah, they both are playful. But I don't just walk up to people that's like wearing a band shirt that I like and hug them. So yeah, parallel walks are always the best way to do intros, depending on the social level of the dogs. But if you have two friendly dogs, a short parallel walk and then some off-leash or dragging leash time is the most ideal. And then I'm super picky, so I don't even let them play for the first one or two meetings, depending on the situation. But that's arguable.
So I will reiterate what Laura said about nose-to-nose on-leash intros. Bad, bad, bad. And then I also just wanted to add that are just passing someone on a walk that you don't know and they ask if their dog can say hi to yours, even if you're not doing nose-to-nose, just say no to that because it's not a good idea. You don't know the other dog, you don't know that person, and you don't know how well they know their dog or they know dog behavior or whatever. So just say no. It is not rude to draw boundaries for yourself and your dog. What would be rude is if they got rude about your boundaries. So just say no.
That is such an excellent point that I love so much.
With that in mind, for dogs that you do want to introduce your dog to, like a friend's dog or family dogs or whatever, on leash is great, like Laura said, doing a parallel walk together where you're all kind of going on a walk with one another. And then it's also fine to do intros indoors or in a yard with some caveats. First, you want to know both dogs pretty well and that both of them are pretty stable social dogs. And you want to know that none of the dogs are territorial over the space, which if they are stable dogs, I don't think that that should be an issue, although I could be convinced otherwise. I recommend keeping dragging leashes on the dogs just in case you need to intervene because it's a lot easier to grab a dragging leash than to grab a collar or a dog. And then finally, keep an eye on body language. So make sure that both dogs are given the option to approach and retreat as they desire, that both dogs are being allowed by the other to sniff the rear end rather than the face to start out. And then if you notice that one dog is trying to get away and the other is not respecting that boundary, it's time to intervene. And it is your job to draw those boundaries because, like, I feel like people might be waiting for it to escalate to a full-blown fight or something before they're grabbing a leash, but it should really not get to that point. It should just be if your dog is a little bit rude, that's your time to step in and draw that boundary and intervene.
Yeah, and I think that's where we get into the, like, oh, they'll work it out. And it's right. Like, yeah, they probably will, but it's probably not a good idea to let them. Because then, one, whoever's being a shit is learning that they can get away with being a shit. Mm-hmm. And whoever's doing the correcting is learning that they have to defend themselves because nobody's going to help them. So, yeah, they will kind of work it out themselves, but they're learning really bad habits along the way. And that's how you get a dog that overcorrects or becomes less tolerant of dogs as they get older, because nobody's intervening when they tell them that, hey, I don't like this situation. And you just leave them there. So they're like, oh, okay.
I guess I'll handle it.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a really good point, too. Just heavy, heavy management. It's not really not that hard. It's something as simple as like calling one of the dogs off if they're paying too much attention or distracting them or whatever it is. Like, it's not a big deal. Just don't let anybody be rude to anybody else. And yeah, once they're established, then yeah, they will work it out themselves. And, you know, Peter, if you try to jump on him or anything like that, or you come on too strong, absolutely not. Never going to happen. Yeah. Peter is not that dog. But once Churchill knows you, you could do anything to him. He doesn't, once you're in, you're in. Like, you could do whatever. He's going to tolerate anything. So, I mean, every dog is different, and that's where you just need to know your dog and know kind of what they will and won't tolerate, right?
Yeah. It's good to know that dogs have pretty short attention spans. So if you're at that point where someone's being rude and you're intervening, it's not like you have to stop playtime. Like Laura was saying, like, it doesn't have to be a whole big thing, but you can like distract your dog for 10 seconds and then like they're reset and let them go back in. So it's not like you have to be like, okay, playtime's over, we're leaving, you know?
No, yeah,
it's not a literally big dramatic event.
Yeah, literally, I just call them off. They come over to me. I say, good job. And they go right back. Like, obviously, if I've done that 2, 3, 4 times and we keep having the same issue, then I'm going to intervene. But like, otherwise, it's literally just, hey, let's try something else.
Yeah.
And generally, they're not going to go back and do the exact same thing 4 times, right? Like, they just, that's not what animals do.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not a big thing. It's literally just like, look at me or walk 2 steps away or whatever. Just literally breaking that fixation of whatever it is that they're doing.
Yeah. So I'm more the kind of person who is usually going to intro indoors or in a yard or something rather than going on a walk. But the times that I will do a walk instead is if I don't know one of the dogs. So like, I don't know how they're going to react or whatever. Or if I have a dog who's, you know, iffy, not totally social, then we'll start with a walk. Or if, which happens to me a lot, if Mooney is too energetic. So like, if your dog is like ready to like run into the room and just high energy and like shaking with excitement, like that is not the time to do a dog intro. So those are good times to kind of start out with a walk and settle down.
It just dawned on me that Mooney is simultaneously both stepbrothers.
Holy shit.
He is, isn't he? I was sitting here like, which one is he? And then I was like, oh my God, he's both.
He's both.
He's both his best friend.
That's hysterical.
It's very accurate. Yeah, I mean, I'm always by myself. So generally I end up having to do yard intros and stuff like that. But I think I just meant parallel walks as far as like, if it's, you know, hey, I'm taking my dog home with me for Thanksgiving and my parents have a dog, they have to get along. Like, oh, my new roommate has a dog. Like situations like that, you have to start with a parallel walk, because if it goes wrong, everybody's screwed, right? Like, yeah. What are you going to do? Not stay at your parents for Thanksgiving? So yeah, just in those situations where it's like, hey, we got to make sure this is good, then that's the safest approach. But yeah, you're right. The reality is 95% of the time I'm doing yard intros where I just have one dog on leash and I'm using a dog that is I can usually voice command. So
our podcast is for people who aren't dog people. So I like need to remember to explain, like over explain things.
I always forget that.
Like my 2 dogs with the puppies are trained to leave them alone. And so like my 2 dogs will lay down in their beds while the puppies investigate at their own pace. So in indoor intros work great for us. But if you have a dog, if you're socializing with the dog who's going to kind of be in the puppy's space and not leaving them alone, then yeah, definitely do that parallel walk. But if you have a dog who can let the puppy go at its own pace, then indoor socialization is fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think the long and the short of it is just parallel walk is like the bomb proof. If you have any chance in hell of them being friends, that's going to be the best way to do it.
Yep.
If you're not worried about it, then yeah, there's a bunch of other options.
Yep. And then also to over explain that parallel walk, you might need to be starting at a distance. So parallel doesn't necessarily mean right next to each other. It could mean on opposite sides of the street, and then you get closer and closer as you go.
And for me, it always means we start on the opposite side of the street. Yeah, I mean, if it's something that I'm not sure about enough to the point that we're doing parallel walks, then I'm always going to start with as much distance as possible.
Yeah.
So that's the ideal way to introduce your dog to new dogs. We'll take a break, and when we get back, we'll talk about proper management in a multi-dog household.
Margarita check. Laura, how's your shitty margarita?
I don't know if I'm just getting drunk or what, but it's getting better. I think, too, I left the jalapenos in there because I didn't have time to soak them. And so now it's starting to taste a little jalapeno-y.
Okay.
Which definitely makes it better because otherwise it's just pineapple. So, yeah, I mean, I'm halfway through it. So maybe I'm just drunk enough to like it now. I don't know.
In our show notes for segment 3, I think it has been like this since like our very first episode. It's like one bullet point is margarita check, and the next bullet in all caps is, do you like your margarita?
And every single week when I do the outline, I'm like, I should change that to something normal. And then I'm like, no, I'm not gonna.
You like your margarita? I think Scott is enjoying my margarita, and I'm really enjoying my gin and tonic. Now let's talk about multi-dog households and dog skills between dogs who live together.
So this is pretty complicated, just because obviously every dog is different and every house is different. So I can have two dogs that are best friends here, but if you put them in a different house with a different routine and different rules, they might not like each other anymore. Yeah, it's just every scenario is so different. And I think it's important to note that even if you have multiple dogs and none of them have issues, anytime you have more than one dog in the house, you need to manage that. So you need to ensure that they have a healthy relationship with each other and you, honestly. Mm-hmm. And ideally that they can also accept other dogs. So a lot of times when people are having issues with multiple dogs in a house, it's because neither dog was actually social before they started living together. But it was like, oh, well, we got lucky and they at least like each other. And it's like, yeah, they don't, though. Yeah, they're not trying to kill each other, but neither one is social and they have a really shitty relationship and they can't communicate. So I can see why you're having issues. And that happens a lot. Like, they have one dog that's not social, but because they get a puppy or whatever the exception is, it ended up working out. And it's like, well, it did in the sense that, like, they're not trying to kill each other. But again, they don't enjoy living with each other. Like,
right. Like, they're not happy. That's not successful.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's a big difference between tolerating a dog that lives with you and actually liking a dog.
Right. So something that I think often gets missed in multi-dog households is enforcing boundaries between the two dogs that they are not necessarily enforcing for themselves. So you'll often hear that one dog lets, quote unquote, lets the other dog do all sorts of things. So for instance, if Mooney is getting attention from me, Balto will shove his way in between Mooney and me so that Balto can get Mooney's attention. And Mooney will, quote unquote, let him do that. But Scott and I don't allow that because, first of all, that's fucking rude. Second, that could build up resentment between the two of them and turn into a bad situation later. Like, if it happens enough times and then it's the straw that breaks the camel's back, suddenly Mooney has a problem. So if you have one dog who's constantly bullying another one by taking his resources or getting in his space or jumping on him or whatever it is, even if the other dog seems to be fine with it and is quote unquote allowing it, it's up to you to set that boundary for your dog so that it doesn't turn into a nasty situation later.
Yes. I think that's probably the most common thing that I see, because quite a few, if not most of my clients are multi-dog households that are having issues. And that's probably one of the most common things I see, that if one dog is getting attention, the other one tries to take it. Mm-hmm. And people generally have learned like that you can't do that with like toys and food and stuff. But for some reason, people don't feel like attention is the same. And so they let it happen. And I'm like, that's one of the worst. Like, you can't do that. Because, I mean, think about it. Think about it as far as kids. If every time you tried to do something with your son, your daughter came and was like, no, I'm going to go. You can stay home. Like, obviously, at some point, your son's going to go fucking postal.
Right.
Right? Because he never gets anything.
Yep. Like, if it makes sense to you with resources, then you know that, like, eventually one of the dogs is going to start guarding that resource. But, like, guarding food or a toy is a lot easier to manage than your dog guarding you from the other dog. Like, you just can't be with both your dogs at the same time now. Like, that's the problem.
I know you guys can't see me, but my eyes got real big and I feverishly nodded yes. Yeah, I don't know. That's like a reoccurring theme, is that people don't think of attention as a resource. And it's the most ludicrous thing, because it's like the arguably the most valuable resource we have. I mean, you could use it instead of treats as a reward. Like, you could use it for anything. Like, if you had nothing but attention, you'd still be okay. Like, if that was the only tool you had and you knew how to use it, you'd be doing all right. Like,
yeah.
Obviously, it's great to have other things, like resources and food and toys and all that. But, like, if you didn't, you could still manage if you knew how. Like, attention is arguably our best tool. And nobody uses it. And it's so obnoxious. Yeah, so kind of like what Lily said, I think one of the most vital things for any house with multiple dogs, regardless of how friendly or not the dogs are, it's just really, really difficult to have multiple dogs in one house without pretty decent boundaries. If it's a complete free-for-all, it's going to be a disaster. I know, because that was my house. Before Charlie started having issues, I brought new dogs in, didn't do any sort of intros. I left everybody out loose together while I was at work for 8 to 10 hours a day, whether it was a new dog or not. Like, there were cats in the house, the whole not, like, just a freaking disaster.
I can't believe that nobody died.
Like, right? Right? I think about it all the time and I'm like, how? How did nobody die? So kennels are, I'm super into kennels. I don't expect everybody to be as into kennels as I am. But I think if you have three or more dogs, it's pretty difficult to manage that without kennels. And it could be my PTSD talking, but I feel like even if I had three friendly dogs, I probably still wouldn't leave them unattended together.
Yeah.
I just don't think I would. I mean, I guess I leave Church and Peter out together, but even that, like, I had to buy a camera. Not that that's going to help me if anything happens, but at least I would know. I don't know. So, yeah, I think kennels are pretty essential if you have three or more dogs. Personally, I think kennels are essential for all dogs, but, you know, whatever. and then, it sounds stupid, but honestly, just basic training. Again, I'll go to houses that their dogs are having issues and it's like, well, yeah, they're not getting along and I know that's why you hired me, but also neither of them knows their name, neither of them knows sit. Like, they have no skills. How do you expect them to get along? Like, yeah. They literally don't know anything. They're just wild animals running around your house. I don't. So yeah, just basic skills, even if it's just their name and sit. Like, if they don't know their name or sit, we got bigger issues than getting along with their sibling.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's probably the most common thing that I see, is that, like, yeah, they're not getting along because of this, that, the other. But the reality is they're not getting along because neither one of them has any skills to speak of at all.
And it's also just indicative if your dog doesn't have any skills that you probably have no control of your dog.
Yeah, if your dog doesn't know its name, I don't know how the hell you're supposed to have control over it. So
yeah. Another thing that I think is important to have this.
That was a good one.
Yeah. Another thing I think is important is to have the same or very similar rules between the dogs in your house. So if one dog is allowed on the furniture, they all are. If one dog is, if you're on a walk with all your dogs and one of them is being trained to walk nicely on a leash, all the dogs need to learn that same thing. So there might be circumstances under which your dogs have different rules depending on behavior or ability or jobs or whatever. But for the most part, there shouldn't be one dog getting privileges in your home that the other ones don't get.
Yeah, you did a really good job of picking up all the shit that I forgot in this episode.
Book, yeah.
So that
did it.
So that's huge, like huge. But yeah, that's super important. And again, I mean, it's easiest to relate it to kids, even though I don't have kids and I don't like kids. But I would assume a lot of our listeners do. You would never dream of doing that with your children. Like, oh, you have your own bedroom and you sleep in a closet. Like, that's that's not a thing. You don't do that, right? And obviously, there are some exceptions. Like, my friend just got a new puppy that I'm obsessed with and I'm so excited.
Ginny.
I get to, no, different one. All my friends got puppies. I get to go meet her on Thursday. But so they have two adult dogs, and their adult dogs, they don't get kenneled anymore. But obviously they're kennel training the puppy. And it's like, that I can kind of give them, right?
Yeah.
Because their older dogs don't need the kennel. So, like, I'm fine with that. And there's always going to be an exception. But obviously, if they start having, like, jealousy issues or anything like that, then I'm going to change my opinion. So, yeah, there are exceptions. But generally, all dogs have the same rules. And you, for some reason, I see this a lot with big dogs and small dogs. Like, small dogs are allowed on the furniture, but big dogs aren't. And I'm like,
right.
If you're trying to get your little dog snatched up, then again, this is a really good way to do it. Because, yeah, it just builds resentment and it's not fair and it's rude.
That's rude.
That's going to be the tagline for this episode. That's rude. So my general rule for having multiple dogs in the home is that we don't want to add another dog unless the existing dog or dogs are in pretty decent shape. I'm not saying they need to be perfect by any means, although that would be ideal. But if your existing dogs have significant issues or aren't at a functioning level socially, it's probably not a good idea to add another one. And I know a lot of people fall into the trap of like, oh, well, if I get another dog, then, you know, they'll be good for this dog. And it's like, well, yeah, but your dog will not be good for this new dog, right?
Yeah. Like,
so you have to be super careful with that. And sometimes that is the case. Like, one of my fosters was terrified of the world and she had a bite history because of it. As long as she was paired with a super social dog, she was completely different. Like, she was amazing. Like, she could walk down the strip, no issue, as long as she was with a confident dog that didn't worry about it. But if she wasn't, if she was by herself and even like somebody came over to the house, total fucking meltdown. Like, wow. So, I mean, there are exceptions to that, but generally speaking, your existing dog is going to teach the new dog kind of what's what. And if your existing dog is a disaster, then your new dog is going to pick up all those habits. So, like,
yeah.
If your dog is super reactive and then you get a new dog, then they're going to teach the new dog to be super reactive.
Yeah.
So you just have to be super careful with that. And just from a training aspect, like, if your dog has issues, you need to work on it. So why are you going to get a new dog and give yourself double the training? I can't imagine you have time to do double the training. I'm not buying that you do. So yeah, just consider that. If you want to get a second dog, then you probably should be working on your original dog so that you can get there.
Yes, agree. Agree.
Let's start doing that where we just say, agree, disagree.
Would you say you strongly agree or totally
agree? Oh, God. On a scale of 1 to 10. Oh, and if you have a high energy dog, your second dog is not going to exercise it for you.
No. Oh my gosh.
Don't be an idiot.
Thank you for saying it. Thank you for saying it. No, your second dog will never, under any circumstances, make your first dog less work for you. Ever. That is not going to happen.
That's true.
So.
Agree.
Don't do that. Agree. Totally agree.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
Close. Are some basic tips for managing a multi-dog household. We will take a break, and when we get back, we'll go over the appropriate dog park etiquette. When we get back, we'll go over dog park etiquette. final margarita check. Laura, how is that spicy pineapple marg going for you?
Did you forget what we were doing?
Yep.
it's delightful, I think.
So you're like feeling pretty good, basically.
Yeah. it's been a really long day. You definitely, the key to a jalapeno pineapple margarita is to let the jalapeno soak. Mm-hmm. It's just, there's no way around it. Because now they've soaked. Or to get
really drunk.
Also, that. Because now it's pretty delicious. Now that it tastes like jalapeno.
I will never be able to think about jalapenos without thinking about the time that my phone auto-corrected jalapenos to kale penis.
I just have so many questions. Like, I've had some pretty interesting autocorrects, but I mean, why?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess that's a phrase that I use often.
When have those two words ever been in the same sentence?
All right, let's talk dark. let's talk dog parks.
Oh, the wheels are coming off. All right, here we go. So yeah, I know most people don't, but I like the dog park. I think if your dog is dog social or even dog tolerant, it's a good tool. Mm-hmm. It's really good exercise, and it helps keep your dog social and keeps them in the practice of meeting new dogs. That being said, there are a lot of rules to the dog park. The problem with the dog park is that nobody follows the rules because people are trash.
Strongly agree.
So yeah, just kind of some of my rules for the dog park, because if you're not going to do these things, then your dog is going to suffer because you shouldn't go. But number one rule is just pay attention, and it really is kind of that simple. You don't need to be overbearing, you don't need to be following them, you don't need to be like within 5 feet of them or anything, but you need to know where your dog is, and you need to be watching all of their interactions. If there's a dog that you feel shouldn't be there, then you should leave. Because I can promise you, getting in a fight with whoever it is isn't going to do you any good.
Yeah.
Trust me, I've tried. Same. Lily has accosted people at the dog park.
Okay, let's be careful with our use of the word accosted. I have made non-friends at the dog park, okay?
That is a way to put it. But yeah, you're never going to win a confrontation in that scenario, regardless of how right you are. I promise. So yeah, if there's a sketch dog that you don't think should be there, just go to a different section or just leave. You'll probably never see them again. So it's just basically paying attention is the biggest thing. Other than that, it's important that your dog has a recall. One of my clients had a really high energy dog, and she would take it to the dog park because it was the only way she could tire it out. But it would take them like 45 minutes to leave because she would literally catch her dog.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And she couldn't.
Okay. So this would be a really good time for me to bring up one of my bullet points. Can I do that really quickly?
I guess.
Yeah. So this is not really an etiquette thing, but since we are talking about dog parks and since we are now talking about recall at the dog park, I want to bring up an awesome recall tip because it is super common for people not to be able to recall their dogs at the dog park and like only the dog park. So often people will say like he knows his recall at home and he's good at it other places, but just not at the dog park. And this makes tons of sense because the dog park is a super fun place and a recall means that it's time for all the fun to stop. So my tip is practice your recall at the dog park by calling your dog, giving a treat, and then letting them go back and play. And don't only use your recall when it's time to leave. And that will help you when it is time to leave to be able to get your dog to come back quicker.
Yes, yes, yes. So, again, having nothing to do with this show. I'm going to say it anyways. So, today is Peter's birthday. It won't be Peter's birthday when you guys are hearing this.
Happy birthday, Peter.
But today is December 1st, and it's Peter's 10th birthday, so I took him hiking because he doesn't really like anything else except for the wilderness. And so, generally, I am a very big advocate against taking your dogs off leash, but Peter was born off leash. And that's, like, again, his favorite thing. And we got super lucky, and I have literally never seen the mountain so deserted in my life. There was literally no one on the entire mountain. It was insane. And so I let him off leash, and again, because I'm a huge advocate against letting your dog off leash, letting him off leash still makes me nervous, even though I know he's not going to go anywhere and nothing's going to happen. But so I'm recalling him, like, literally every 5 minutes. And his fucking recall is so good. Which is impressive because we don't work on it ever. But I was impressed and excited. So recall is fun and you should do it. But yeah, that's a really good point. The only time you're recalling your dog at the dog park is when it's time to go. So that's a pretty good way to teach them not to do recall.
Yep.
So yeah, definitely practice it. Like, that's what I was doing with Peter because I was so terrified that we were going to run into a dog on the trail, even though there was literally nobody on the mountain. And so literally every like 10 minutes I would just, Peter, come. And he would come, and he doesn't like food. So I just told him good job and he got excited. But I kept doing that the whole way down the mountain in case we ran into anybody that I could call him off and he would already be in the practice of what we were doing. I'm not just going to wait until we run into someone and then be like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm going to practice it all the way down the mountain in case that happens. And then as far as actually playing with the other dogs at the dog park, play should always be reciprocal. It's pretty obvious kind of what is and isn't reciprocal dog play. If you're confused about that, I'm sure there's videos on YouTube.
I think the one thing that would be the easiest to miss, because it might just look like normal play, is if there's one dog who's always chasing the other one.
Mm-hmm.
That sometimes looks like both dogs are having fun, but if they're not switching back and forth the chasing, that's a good sign that it's not reciprocal.
Yeah, and there are exceptions. Like, Peter wants dogs to chase him. He does not want to chase other dogs. He wants to be chased because he knows he can outrun every single dog. That's like his jam. But yeah, that's a really good one. Because even Peter, even though that's like how he likes to play, he'll still like stop and chase the other dog for a second and then get them to come back at him. Like, it's still reciprocal, even though he's the one that wants to be chased. But yeah, if you notice a dog is bothering your dog and you can tell your dog isn't into it, or vice versa, which is more often the case, you need to get involved and diffuse the situation. And like we talked about earlier, it doesn't have to be some huge dramatic thing. It's literally just calling your dog off. Because even if the other dog is bothering your dog coming over to you is generally going to get the other dog to drop it. And then obviously if you're the dog, your dog is the one that's doing the bothering, calling him off is going to get him to stop as well. Number one rule, I lied before, paying attention is not the number one rule. The number one rule is that the dog park is not where you socialize your dog. I know that's super confusing because I said something kind of different earlier. But the dog park is where a dog that is already social goes to keep up the practice. It is not where they learn to be social. Unless you just have a really big thing about bad habits, because in that case, have a good time. But yeah, the dog park is for dogs that are already social. It is not for dogs learning how to be social. Because again, most dogs at the dog parks are fucking rude. And I don't want my dog to learn to be fucking rude.
Yep.
So yeah, definitely the dog park is for already social dogs. It is not for socializing your dog. That is what your friend's dogs are for, or daycare even, where it's a little bit more monitored, things like that. But the dog park is for dogs that are already social.
Yes. So I used to really love the dog park, and I've had a couple bad experiences, and now I really hate it. I don't hate the idea of it. I just hate going. So I agree with Laura about everything she said. It can be awesome to get your dog a social outlet. So again, not to where you're going to teach your dog how to be social, but to give them a social outlet and then also a lot of exercise. Personally, I get so anxious watching for that moment that we need to leave that I'm just sick to my stomach the whole time. And that's a totally personal thing. So I just don't go to the dog park anymore. But I do think it's awesome in a lot of ways. So some etiquette things that I wrote down. If you have treats for your dog, which I do recommend that you have, make sure they're in a pouch that zips or closes or is out of reach so that other dogs can't get your treats. And if you want to give treats to another dog, ask the dog's owner first. So that dog might be allergic to certain things or on a special diet or something. So don't ever give your treats to a strange dog at the dog park. And I would also consider it pretty poor etiquette, even if you have permission to give treats to a dog or even pay attention to a dog who is being rude, like jumping on you or otherwise being rude. Don't reward rude behavior for someone else's dog. Ask the dog to sit or something before you give it attention or treats, because otherwise you could just be causing a difficult situation for that owner.
I'm going to disagree with you there, because I would never, ever, ever bring food into the dog park. Not doing it.
I would never go in without it.
Oh, really? Oh, God, yeah. No. Nope. I don't do it. I mean, there is the reasoning of if your dog is resource guards, it shouldn't be at the dog park. But I feel like if your dog is fine, as long as there's not food around, like, that shouldn't ban them from the dog park at the same time, you know? I mean, I guess maybe. I could see both sides of it, but I personally could never bring myself to bring food into a pack of dogs.
I've never had an issue with it. If I did see that another dog was upset about the food, I probably would just keep it zipped.
Yeah.
Not bring it out at that point, but I've never had an issue.
It's never really come up for me because I don't really, I don't like carry around a treat pouch all the time. I do so more now, but like, I think it was a few months ago, there was a dog that was adopted and returned within 24 hours because they were stupid and they took her directly to a dog park, which is fine because she was dog friendly. But then somebody brought out treats and she went after one of the other dogs and immediately got returned.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's like she was fine at the dog park until somebody brought out the treats. I also just don't use food that much, so that's probably part of it.
Yeah, I like to use it for that double reward. So when we're working on our recalls, when it's not time to go home yet, they get a treat for coming back and then they get to go play. So it's like two rewards for recall. And then it's also nice to have something for when you do recall your dog out of something to kind of reset them. It's nice for them to have like a reason to come to you. So.
Yeah, I mean, I use treats for recall outside of the dog park. I think if I was in the dog park, I would only use attention.
Yeah, I have not met a ton of dogs that would recall to me at the dog park if they knew I just had attention for them. So,
I mean, I only have a couple dogs that go to the dog park, so I don't know. My dogs that do go to the dog park do it, but I also feel like most of my dogs that go to the dog park are pretty fucking good, so it's kind of a moot point. But generally speaking, if you're going to the dog park, you don't have big issues, so...
So the takeaway from this is be cognizant if you have your food with you. Just be paying attention, be aware. And don't reward other people's dogs for lousy behavior. And then the other point that I made, I wrote after I started drinking my gin and tonic. It is don't take your dog to the dog park and expect other dogs to stay away from you and your dog. Don't do that, you crap lousy bitch, in all capital letters.
That may or may not have been the situation I alluded to earlier. Yeah.
That has actually happened to me a few times. It's like,
yeah,
we're walking around the dog park and someone is playing fetch with their dog, which here's another etiquette thing. Don't play fetch at the dog park either. Don't do that. But like someone's playing fetch with their dog in a corner and you like walk by with your dog and they're like, oh, could you, no, please don't let your dog approach my dog. And I'm like, you're in the fucking dog park. Like you can leave.
Yeah.
If you don't like my dog coming near your dog, but
yeah. Or yeah. Dogs that like guard their ball.
Right.
And it's like, go play in a fucking field somewhere, bro.
Right.
Yeah, they, so most of the dog parks here have, like, multiple sections or whatever. And so I was on one side of the dog park with one of my, I had a husky puppy that was, I was fostering. So I took her and Peter to the dog park. And I mean, she was a puppy, but she was, like, 6 months. She was kind of big. But there were just a few dogs that came in that were just super shitty and shouldn't have been there. So I'm obviously, I did yell at him. But I also left. I mean, literally, his dog was being like crazy reactive at the gate. And I was like, he's not going to open the gate. And sure enough, he opened the gate and it immediately grabbed my foster's neck and pinned her to the ground.
Oh, my God.
And he's like, that's just how he plays. So, of course, you know me. I lost my fucking marbles. but then she was super high energy. So the whole point of me being there was to let her run. And the other side was pretty much empty with like one other dog in it. So I go on the other side, and as soon as I set foot in there, this lady with this German Shepherd is like, she's not friendly. I'm like, so leave. This is a dog park. Well, it was just me in here a minute ago, and I was like, that's great. It's a dog park. You shouldn't be here if your dog's not friendly. We'll go back on the other side. And, like, she's arguing with me about how she should have this section of the dog park to herself with her aggressive shepherd. I was like, are you out of your... And she wouldn't leave. She put the dog on leash and, like, circled us until I finally left. Yeah, oh, my God. I can't. So I totally understand why people hate the dog park. Because I kind of hate it, too, to be honest. And there were literally... There was years where I didn't take Peter... But then I felt bad because Peter fucking loves it and it's not his fault. I have a temper.
Yeah. So Mooney loves it too. And I do feel bad a lot of the time that I don't take him, but I'm just.
I think the pros outweigh the cons. It's just you have to. I mean, it's a tool, right? So you just have to know how to use it, I guess, is the gist.
Yeah. And then, I mean, we've been recording for almost an hour and a half, so maybe this won't make it in, but maybe it'll go in the treat pouch. But just for anyone who's curious, some lady at the dog park hit Mooney with strings of beads.
It's so weird.
It's the weirdest story. We were walking around. This was what's that place called? It's like
I want to say Magnuson.
Yeah.
In Seattle. I know, because that's the fucking best dog park because it has the lake.
It is. It's such a good dog park. There's like
I dream about that dog park.
There's swimming areas. It's like it's huge. There's a ton of space and everything. And yeah, we were walking around and Mooney approached a dog and the dog's owner struck my dog with strings of beads that she was carrying around. And when I was like, did you just hit my dog? She was like, well, yeah, my dog doesn't like other dogs. And I was like, ooh, yikes. So
I like that you're pretending that you said ooh, yikes.
No, I said a lot of things that caused her to leave.
She's pretending that she didn't immediately lose her fucking marble. Yeah,
I did. Well, you know,
I've lost my marbles over a lot less. I'll say that.
At first I didn't. I just said, you know what? I said, you can't be here then. You have to leave. And don't hit my fucking dog. And then she said, that's not very ladylike. And that is the moment at which I lost my shit. Because apparently it's not ladylike to say fuck. But it is ladylike to abuse animals. And so that is when I started screaming at her and told her that she didn't even know what unladylike was. And I wasn't even getting started. And she was little and old, and I towered over her until she left.
Which is hilarious, because Lily is also a pretty small person.
I'm 5'6", you know? I'm average.
I'm average. Oh, man. So good.
So that's just one story. There really have been, I would say, at least six times that I've been to the dog park, and someone... is mad that I am also at the dog park with my dog. And so I just, you know, don't want to do it anymore.
Oh, man, that was the best explanation. Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's one of the big reasons that I stopped going to the dog park for so long is because I mean, I'm super protective of all my dogs, but if you even look at Peter, Peter's my only dog that really goes to the dog park. If you look at him the wrong way, I'm going to go to prison. Like, I mean, he's terrified of the world. He's my littlest dog. Like, he's my first dog. Like, he's just my baby. And I will defend him till the ends of the earth. And if your dog gets shitty with him or you say something bad about him, God rest your soul. I can't make peace
with your God.
Exactly. So I stopped going because I got genuinely worried there for a little bit. I was like, I mean, my brother's a lawyer, but he doesn't practice that kind of law. So I need to be careful. I am also poor and don't have bail money.
Well, I feel like I should end with a good dog park story, or at least a funny one, so that people aren't just like having a sour taste of dog park.
Yeah, we kind of ended this with like dog parks are shitty.
But there was one time when I took Balta to the dog park. I will take Balta to the dog park with no issues. I just feel bad leaving Mooney at home, so I don't do it a lot. But Balto is the basic definition of a dog tolerant dog. Like, he is not really dog social, doesn't super want to play or even meet really, but he is super tolerant, so he's really easy. But for some reason, there was one day that we went, and it was this dog park in Kent that I also can't remember the name of, and he for some reason fell in love with this little heeler mix, like just was in love with her, smitten, following her around and wanting to play with her and stuff. And we were walking out of the dog park to go home, and the path up out of the dog park was kind of a level up from the rest of the dog park. So there was like this big cliff with brambles and all sorts of things on it. And Balto looked over as we were leaving and saw the little heeler at the bottom of the cliff and threw himself off the cliff and like careened down through these brambles. And I lost sight of him underneath all the brush and everything. And then he just popped up at the bottom and was like, oh, I love you. And it
was hilarious. That's my favorite. Mostly because it's such a Balto thing to do. I'm like, I'm going to go fling myself off this cliff, but don't worry, I'll be right back. It's all good.
I had to apologize profusely to this poor guy who, like, a wolf just popped up in front of him on the trail.
Yeah, that's the only reason that I would be worried about taking Balto to the dog park. It has nothing to do with him. More so just the fact that I feel like people would be fucking terrified when I walked in.
I kind of love that, like, maybe they'll leave, you know?
Yeah, right? Also. I mean, the same thing happens when I take Church. People are like,
which is so sad because he's just the sweetest,
right? I'm like, he's literally gonna sleep next to me the whole time and not move, so if that's what you're worried about, I can't help you. Yeah, I don't really have any particularly good dog park stories other than Peter just likes to run. He just likes to run wild. I don't know.
All right. Well, now that we have talked about the pros and cons of the dog park, mostly the cons, I think that about
I really do like it.
And I really do like the idea of it. So there's that. So I think that about wraps it up. Our 12th episode is ready to be let out of the kennel. You can find me on Instagram at Miss Lily's Dogs or on my website, MissLily'sDogs.com, or my online training platform, Patreon.com/MissLily'sDogs.
And you can find me on Instagram at properpuppersLV and my website, properpuppersLV.com. In our next episode, much to Lily's chagrin, we will be drinking Valentine's margaritas and talking about how to hire a dog trainer. Next time on the Doggeritaville podcast.
Thanks for listening to Doggeritaville.
Send us an email at doggeritaville@gmail.com.
Or send us a DM on Instagram @doggeritaville.
And let us know if there are any topics you'd like to see covered.
Or if there are any margaritas you want us to try.
And don't forget to leave us a review.
Until next time, give your dog a treat from us.